Well, folks, welcome in. Good to have you with us for a big hour, and this is going to be a big hour because we're dealing with an issue that goes to the heart and soul of the United States Constitution, something that Barack Obama isn't too concerned about by proof of his behaviors over the years with immigration executive memos that should have been left to the Congress, delaying portions of Obamacare, a law that was to be implemented when the Congress said it was, and he delayed it, which should have been done by Congress, appointing three members to the National Labor Relations Board when he said the Senate was in recess, when in fact it was still in session by its own definition and had been every year by ritual. Both Republicans and Democrats honored the right of the Senate to be in session. But Obama said, well, they're not really doing anything. A couple of guys are speaking. So he appointed three members to the NLRB. The United States Supreme Court said 9-0. Mr. Obama, you couldn't do it. So those are just some examples, but this one takes the cake. And we're glad to have with us a gentleman who knows all about what's going on. Chaim Mendelbaum, I should say, is with the Heartland Institute, and he is a powerful voice with regard to, I should say, the Heartland Institute as a major player in the environmental issues. We've had them on the air many times. He's actually with, I guess we lost our guest. Well, let's see if we can get him back. I'll just mention, he is counsel to the Energy and Environment Legal Institute, earned his law degree at George Mason School of Law. He did work for the Department of Defense of the United States. He was an associate editor of the Military Journal Joint Force Quarterly. And what he's concerned about is the same thing that the Heartland Institute's been concerned about here at the Energy and Environment Legal Institute, which is, in fact, they work together on some things, as I understand, which is that the attempt by some attorneys general to be the point men for Barack Obama to shut people up about any opposition to their agenda to reverse our interest in fossil fuels and stick only to solar energy, wind power, I suppose nuclear, but experts tell me you couldn't replace what we have with those forms of energy in our lifetime, in many lifetimes. Nevertheless, we'd like to have with us Chaim Mendelbaum, and he is here, as I mentioned, as an attorney, and he's counsel to the Energy and Environment Legal Institute. Mr. Mendelbaum, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, and thank you very much for having me on.
It's good to have you with us, and I appreciate you taking the time. There are so many issues here. Let's go to the first one, and we'll get to the Constitution. But the first one is the fundamental point. The science that I've read, and I mentioned that your organization has worked with the Heartland Institute on this issue, as I understand it, in some ways,
yes,
or intersected. As you know, I have it at home. It's about an 800-page compendium of science demonstrating that human beings do not cause global warming in any appreciable way or climate change in any appreciable way. So it's at least a debatable issue. Is that not the case?
Oh, it's very much a debatable issue. I mean, this issue, I think, is not only open to debate. I think there's a lot of evidence that tends to go against the dire warnings that we've been getting. And these are dire warnings we've been getting every year for the last decade, every year for the last 20 years. We keep getting told that disaster is around the corner unless we change our wicked ways. And yet this disaster somehow never materializes. I think American people are starting to get a little tired of it, to be honest with you.
Well, here's the problem, though, is that dissemination of information is important. I'm sure you remember, and maybe some of our listeners do as well, Dr. Phil Jones, University of East Anglia. He's the point man for the promulgation of this fraud on global warming being caused by human beings. And he basically was caught in the ClimateGate scandal by deleting all of the emails and the science sent to him by other scientists against his point of view. In other words, it was concocted to be the point of view in the end that they wanted it to be. He later was exposed. I think he claimed he was almost committed suicide, but he's right back at it again in charge of that organization, which is under the umbrella of the United Nations. Isn't this really what it's about, that it's an international global political agenda that these people are just point people for?
It's very much an international global political agenda. I mean, they have a point of view that they want to push, and they don't want to hear any evidence otherwise. And they take control of scientific organizations. They take control of prominent journals. And then they want to only publish articles that promote their own point of view. And if you come to them with something, even something perfectly sourced, even something that's pristine science, They're going to reject it. They're going to reject it over and over again, no matter how many times you give it to them. And I can't tell you how many scientists I've heard from who tell me the same story, that unless you give them what they want to hear, you're not going to get published.
Well, and then they try and discredit scientists who do this work and tell the truth. I believe the fellow's name is Professor Willie Soon, if I remember correctly, at MIT. Well, you know the story better than I do, but I know I've talked about him in the past, and he does great work, a highly revered scientist, and they tried to blemish him by the fact that funding for the work that he does came from some of the fossil fuel industry. Tell us about that a little bit, if you would.
Dr. Soon is a brilliant scientist, as you said. I mean, he's worked on any number of issues and was widely lauded and regarded for all of his work until some of his work started to challenge the orthodoxy that the green movement holds, until some of his work started to say, wait, no, some of this, what you're saying about global warming may not come to pass, or it may not be nearly as bad as you guys want to say. And then all of a sudden, you know, the knives came out and started getting plunged into his back. They started attacking him, and they couldn't attack him on his science, his research, on his methodology. So instead, they started saying, well, you're biased because some of the money that goes to a foundation that supports you came from groups we don't like.
And I recollect that he didn't even know where the money came from. Am I correct about that?
I don't know if he knew where the money came from, but what's very clear is that he didn't care where the money came from. What he cared about was that there were people who were willing to back his work. He wasn't interested in what they wanted him to say. He was only interested in finding out the truth.
And that's really the bottom line here. And unfortunately, the other side doesn't want to do that. You know, I always use two examples, Mr. Mandelbaum, that come to light as examples of how they get their conjured up impact, allegedly, of human beings causing climate change. One of those is they use thermometers around the world in different locations. I read a piece where it was pointed out that one of those was placed, I think it was at Heathrow Airport in London, at the back of the runway where the plane shoots out all of the jet fuel taking off. What is it, 1,700, 2,000 degrees, whatever it is. And so they put the thermometer there. Obviously, the temperature is going to go up. Then they put another one near an incinerator. And obviously, the temperature was going to go up. Well, that's artificial. That's not science. That's artificial. And that's what they don't want anybody to know about, is that conjured up science to create the notion of global warming caused by human beings.
I mean, that's not all they do. I mean, they like to cherry pick their data. They like to take years and eras when, you know, the facts favor them, and then just discard any periods that don't. And for those scientifically inclined, you might know that just a few centuries ago, there was what was called the Little Ice Age, back in the time of the Vikings. The Vikings used to be very prominent. They were, you know, exploring the New World well before Columbus. And they were doing so because Greenland was very warm at the time, and they were able to go across the North Atlantic, and they were able to find food, and they were able to do all of this stuff. And then we had what's called the Little Ice Age, when the North Atlantic suddenly got very cold. Now, there were no factories back then. There were no cars. It happened naturally. And so what do scientists do? They start dating after the Little Ice Age so they can helpfully, you know, not have to examine that period.
Well, and that's of course, going to give them the results they want, obviously, and the results they want is to try and conjure up that somehow human beings are causing this problem. You know, and really, when we come back, I want to talk a bit about this point that we're only talking, presumably, the last 50 years that human beings could even possibly have had an impact, and the planet's been there for 5 billion. So figure that one out. The 50 years is causing a problem to a planet that's 5 billion years old. We come back with Chaim Mandelbaum, and good to have him with us on global warming as a fraud. Mike Siegel here. Stay with us. Back we are. Good to have you with us, folks. Mike Siegel in as we get back with our guest, Chaim Mandelbaum. And delighted to have him with us. He is counsel for the Energy and Environment Legal Institute and is here to talk about global warming and the fraud of climate change being perpetrated as a hoax on really not just the American people, but people around the world. And we're going to get to also some of the information they found through a Freedom of Information Act. Mr. Mandelbaum, let me read this to you from Breitbart. The subheadline says this. One of the most dangerous men of the 20th century has just died, and the weird thing is hardly anyone noticed. His name was Maurice Strong, Canadian billionaire diplomat Ewan Paruchik, and though you may not have heard of him, he probably did more to make your world more expensive, inconvenient, overregulated, hectored, bullied, lied to, sclerotic, undemocratic place than anyone post Hitler, Stalin, and his personal friend Mao. He's the reason, for example, that most of the world's leaders, 40,000 delegates and their attendant carbon mega footprint, descended here on Paris yesterday for this COP21 climate summit in order to talk about magical fairy dust for 2 weeks and then charge you $1.5 trillion per year for the privilege. And it goes on from there. But Maurice Strong was the point man in the 70s who created that event. I believe it was Colorado Springs. That was the precursor to the panic he was supposed to create about global warming. So this has been an ongoing agenda for decades, hasn't it?
Yes. Back then they called it global cooling. That's what we were all supposed to be afraid of. But when the facts inconveniently didn't fit the theme, they decided to repackage it. Then it became global warming. And then it became climate change. And they keep changing, you know, what they want to call it until they find something that they think people will actually be afraid of.
And the role that Maurice Strong played was enormous, was it not?
Well, I can't talk about him specifically, but I can tell you that he and people like him have been working for decades to put in place regulation that does nothing but add costs to the average American's life. I mean, the amount we spend in subsidies on these green technologies that are in no way, shape, or form profitable without, you know, immense amounts of government money is just obscene. And we're taking money from profitable industries and giving it to things in order to prop them up, in order to pretend that someday these technologies might be profitable.
You know, the interesting part of this is, I mentioned he was a friend of Mao's. He wound up working for the Chinese in his later years till he died, and he lived in Beijing in a compound protected by the People's Liberation Army. And, you know, I always wondered what it was he was doing for the Chinese in those years, but... What I'm trying to get to here is there was an agenda. There is an agenda. It was started pretty much back then. He was simply the guy who was put up front to create the panic and the problem. And they've gone on from there to this day. Matter of fact, wasn't it Al Gore in the last day or two? It was either the fires in California, the horrible thing, and, of course, maybe even more horrible or just as horrible as the flooding in Louisiana, Baton Rouge. Gore said... it was global warming causing it. Did you see that piece?
Oh, absolutely. But then they'll claim anything that goes wrong is because of global warming. I mean, any fire, any flood, I mean, as though these things haven't happened on the Earth, you know, ever before. These are brand new things that are only happening now because of global warming. And that's part of the real tragedy. I mean, you know, these terrible things that happen, that have always happened, and that we have to work to both, you know, reduce the severity of, and to help the innocent people who are victims of, and all they want to do is jump on a soapbox and say, you see, this is only happening because of, you know, this magical problem. And if you'd only spend all of this money to, you know, reduce, you know, what you're doing, reduce living the Western lifestyle you're living, and live the way that we don't live, but we want to tell you to live, then all of these problems would just go away, as though there would never again be fires or floods or anything bad ever.
Well, and we know that, of course... actually, we're in pretty good shape when it comes to that. Not many hurricanes of Category 4 or 5 magnitude in many years. Not many hurricanes in total. We really don't have a climactic condition that demonstrates any reason for believing that there's anything worse in the environment now than there was in the past, is there? Because the temperature's changed, stayed the same for the last 17 years on the planet, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. I mean, and that's an inconvenience fact they continue to either ignore or often deny and just say this is the hottest year on record. But temperatures really haven't been increasing. I mean, temperatures have been staying the same. And the number of these natural disasters hasn't been going up. I mean, you point out hurricanes haven't been going up. We had worse hurricanes 20 years ago. And so when every time that a bad one does occur, like Hurricane Sandy in New York, another tragedy, They jump on it and they harp on it to say this is the result of, you know, global warming, because they need to be able to point to these things in order to make people afraid, because they know that the only way that they're going to win is if they can get people scared enough that they'll allow this new government regulation, yet another round of government interference in our lives, yet another round of taxes that to support them and, you know, their favorite industries in order to continue their campaign.
You know, you just made an important point, Mr. Mandelbaum, about the temperature being constant in the last 17 years, because here's the proof of their fraud. We've had a considerable increase in carbon dioxide emissions into the atmosphere during that same period. So therefore, there is no correlation between so-called global warming, because it hasn't warmed, and increased carbon dioxide, CO2, carbon emissions, because it hasn't happened that way. The carbon emissions have increased, but the temperature stayed the same. So they can't make their case, can they?
No, they really can't. And so instead they talk around it, or they pretend that it has increased. Or they just say, well, this month is warmer than it was in the past. They don't want to look at the inconvenient fact that overall temperatures are just not going up.
Is there anything that you see that could justify that position? I try to think in terms of, well, maybe what's going on here? Look, if we got rid of carbon dioxide, vegans would have to go away. You wouldn't have any vegetables because you wouldn't have any photosynthesis. They wouldn't be able to, they breathe in the carbon dioxide. We breathe in air, and they breathe in carbon dioxide. If you don't have carbon dioxide for the plants, you don't have plants. So now what?
Now nothing. I mean, life doesn't work without a proper balance in the atmosphere. I mean, any basic, you know, scientist can tell you that. I mean, it's stuff we learn in ninth grade earth science. And the stuff that they want to peddle just doesn't make sense. It never has.
Well, we could go on all night about that. I want to come back and get to the situation of your Freedom of Information Act and cover in the next couple of segments a very serious issue, which is the use of the Office of Attorney General in about 15 or 16 or 17 states to try to suppress conversation on this subject. We got about 40 seconds before breaking. A quick comment from you about the fact that major media will not cover the side of this debate which says there is no global warming caused by human beings. What about that?
And the major media has decided that they like one side, that they like the leftist side of this, and that they just don't want to deal with it anymore. They've picked their side, and they just don't want to tell people the truth because it's not politically appropriate as far as they're concerned. And they don't want to give both a balanced, you know, situation. They just want to tell people what they should believe.
The scary part of that is Jefferson made the point that the Fourth Estate, the press, was going to be the auditor to hold government accountable. And he premised it on the fact that they would be fair and report all sides. The media have let Jefferson down dramatically. We'll come back to that point and the point on the Freedom of Information Act with our guest Chaim Mandelbaum. Stay with us. Welcome back in, folks. Good to have you with us. Mike Siegel here. We have a rational conversation going on because what you hear from Al Gore, Barack Obama, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, there's a bunch of poppycock and balderdash about global warming and climate change. We've talked about that many times here. But, you know, it's interesting, Mr. Mandelbaum, as you well know as an attorney, and I'm sure your organization that's involved in this issue directly, Energy and Environment Legal Institute, know that when Obama tried to get through his package on global warming alleged in his first term, when the Democrats had the majorities in the House and Senate, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi wouldn't push him through, and he had majorities. So even they realized, apparently, when it came down to push came to shove, that this was a fraud. Otherwise, they would have done it. And even in that bill, when Obama first proposed it, there was something like $3 billion in the bill for people who were going to have to be redirected to different kinds of jobs, acknowledging that large numbers of people would lose their jobs. What do you make of that?
Oh, absolutely. It was going to be an absolutely economically disastrous bill. And I think ultimately that's why they blinked. They realized that the American people were never going to forgive them for destroying as much industry, as many American jobs as that bill would have destroyed. And even the Democrats didn't want to take responsibility for what that bill would have done to our economy, what that bill would have done to American workers. I mean, $3 billion wouldn't have even come close to covering it. I mean, what they've done just using the Environmental Protection Agency's regulatory power, what they've done just using the Department of Interior's regulatory power has cost more than that in terms of putting people in Appalachia out of work, in terms of damaging coal companies, damaging energy companies, in terms of costing Americans money in what's been given in subsidies to unprofitable green energy companies, unprofitable wind companies and solar companies. But that bill would have just done more damage than we can even realize.
Yeah, unfortunately, it didn't make it.
Thank God.
Well, so let's talk about the status now, because Obama's done a group of executive orders. He may do more before he leaves. Now, those could be reversed in January. If Hillary gets there, they won't be. If she doesn't get there, they will be. So tell us about what he's done by executive order and how much impact that's had. I know the coal industry has been devastated by what he's done. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. And he's done things with executive orders, and he's told the Environmental Protection Agency to do things with regulations, things like his Clean Power Plan, which aimed to essentially stop any new coal power plants from ever being created in the United States, and to shut down most of the existing ones by mandating extremely expensive, basically unaffordable upgrades and retrofits in order to supposedly capture the carbon or prevent the carbon from escaping. This is something that's going to devastate the industry, devastate American power, run up our electric bills, and it's all essentially to do what President Obama promised back when he was candidate Obama. He said then, I'm going to make green power affordable. I'm going to make green power profitable. That was what he promised. That's what he promised them, and that's what he's trying to do. The only way to do it, though, is to make all other forms of power unprofitable, because you can't actually make green power profitable. It's never going to be profitable. All you can do is impose government costs on the coal industry, on the oil industry, on the natural gas industry, until those are even less profitable.
Well, it's obviously he's been trying to do that. Now, the Bakken Reserve got done on private land in spite of Obama. The XL pipeline has not been done because of Obama. And we've seen offshore drilling shut down for periods of time by Obama. And we have huge resources of and stockpiles of this kind of energy that we could ship out to the rest of the world and actually make money. More importantly, become self-sufficient. But this president won't let us do that. If we became self-sufficient, we wouldn't need the Middle East, which is a complete quagmire to begin with.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, private industries worked really hard over the last 8 years to do more, even under the restrictions Obama put in place. And if we had an administration that was actually friendly to them, that actually wanted to work with them, I mean, what they could have done would have been amazing. I mean, what they've done with fracking, what they've done to, you know, improve America's energy efficiency and to pump out more oil from the United States so that we have alternatives has been amazing. And the only thing the administration has done is try to block it.
Let me ask you about the release that you put out, that the Energy and Environment Institute. You talk about a coordinated effort on the part of 15 Democrat state attorneys general to keep their prosecution of climate change deniers secret and thwart the Freedom of Information Act requests. We hear about FOIA a lot because of Hillary Clinton, so people are now becoming more familiar with that. But then later in the same piece, you say it was found that there were coordinated activities of the state attorneys general protecting Obama's environmental agenda as the primary motive for the 17 Democrat attorneys general. So is it 15 or 17?
But it's 15 states plus the District of Columbia and the territory known as the Virgin Islands.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
Two of them aren't states.
All right. So let's go from there. I appreciate you clearing that up.
It really goes back to March of this year when, and the ringleader of this is New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, a man who's much less interested in being Attorney General and upholding the law than he is in using his office to promote his political views. And what it really goes down to is he got a bunch of other attorney generals together, along with Al Gore, and they did a press conference where they essentially promised to go after anybody who dissented on climate change. They were going to use the police powers of the state to start investigations, principally using what's called RICO, anti-racketeering laws, laws that were first passed back in the 1970s in order to break the back of the mafia. And what they were going to do with these laws is begin investigations into people who were denying climate change. And the goal was to essentially force everybody to stop. And hopefully, they thought, to force companies to stop giving money to anybody who dissented, and maybe even to pay money into the states that they could use to promote the green agenda. That was their goal, and that's why they first got together.
But to do that, look, if first year of law school, you take constitutional law, it's a no-brainer. It's not rocket science. Lay people understand that when it comes to public issues, the court has been very hesitant, beyond hesitant, restrained in limiting any kind of discussion on public issues. Now, if you get into other things, that's another story. There are some limitations on free speech, defamation, libel, slander, fighting words, things like that. Some commercial speech can be limited. You can't falsely put an ad on television with false information in it. But we're talking here about public issues. When it comes to public issues, there is almost no restraint. According to the Supreme Court. So, therefore, how can these thugs, they should be stripped of their licenses to practice law, these 17 attorneys general, because what they're doing is violating the Constitution at its essential level. We're talking about one of the fundamental freedoms in the Constitution. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom to travel. These are fundamental. The right of privacy, and that's how the women got the abortion right. Those are fundamental rights. How are they trying to take away a fundamental right? Why don't you guys take them to court based on the fact that you got the, we'll talk about the memo that you saw, and let it go up to the Supreme Court that they're trying to gag people on this. Why not do that?
Some people have started taking it to court, and every time they've taken it to court, they've backed off. What they've decided to do was say that it was fraud, that denying climate change is essentially akin to fraud because you're somehow hurting the public. And their mantra is, well, fraud isn't free speech. Of course, there's nothing fraudulent about pointing out that there's significant flaws in climate change theory. There's nothing wrong in pointing out that there's a lot of dissenting science. But that was their theory. But we'll just call this all fraud, and then it's not protected.
Well, wait, let me ask you something.
With a huge backlash.
All right, so are you saying that the climate change promoters back off when they get challenged? We have 15 seconds. Is that what you're saying?
Some of them do, yes. And when people seriously challenge them, some of them, like the Virgin Islands Attorney General, who started sending out subpoenas to think tanks and private groups, do back off when people tell them that we're going to fight back.
We'll come right back. Stay with us. And back we are, folks. Good to have you with us. Mike Siegel here. We're talking with Chaim Mendelbaum. He is counsel. And does a great job at that, by the way, for the Energy and Environment Legal Institute. Glad to have him with us. All right, so you got the Freedom of Information Act request finally fulfilled, Mr. Mendelbaum, and you saw some very interesting things.
Absolutely.
These guys, let me just say this. The guys created, these attorneys general created an agreement, whatever kind of agreement it was, and they talked about legal action could be taken, quote, to defend federal greenhouse gas emission limits, end quote, and then open investigations of, quote, possible illegal conduct to limit or delay the implementation and deployment of renewable energy technology, end quote. You know, the culprit behind all of this is clearly Tom Steyer. He's probably paying these guys off left, right, and sideways. These attorneys general probably promised them to fund their campaigns. He made his money in coal, still owns coal in Europe, but he's now wanting to make his money on these green so-called energy sources. And he's paying students on college campuses to try to get them to get their administrations to defund any fossil fuel companies. He's paying students to go in and start rebellions against investment of college and university money in fossil fuel companies, ExxonMobil, others like that. And so he's a big culprit here. How big a culprit is he, and why are these attorneys general doing this?
Well, the attorneys general are doing this because a few of them, like Eric Schneiderman of New York, seem to have higher political agendas, and they decided to take these campaigns and run with it. I mean, a man like Tom Steyer, and he's invested his money in these green companies, and they're going bankrupt at an alarming rate. If the federal government doesn't step in to make them profitable, then he and men like him are bound to lose a lot of money. And so for them, it's economic necessity. They're determined to do this because it's going to make them money.
Well, he had a big hand in the platform of the Democratic Party at the DNC.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you know that. So, you know, he's a big part of this. But the American people, what is it? What is, even with no discussion, because these media don't want to discuss it, including some of the television networks. What is the present, do you have any idea on polling of the American people, where the American people stand on whether we want to get rid of fossil fuels?
I think the American people are almost always against it. I mean, anytime you put this to them and tell them what the cost is going to be, the American people reject it soundly. I mean, there's no interest in doing this. I mean, there's never been an interest in doing this, and that's why they don't try to win the Democratic sphere. They don't try to get to win in Congress. They don't try to push these as actual political issues. Instead, they do it far more insidiously. I mean, that's what this Attorney General campaign is all about. They can't win in the public, and so they want to silence their critics. And that this terrifying part is they don't even need to win in court. Because imagine if you're an individual or a small business or a think tank, and you get told by your attorney general that they're going to investigate you for this fraud related to what you said or what you thought about climate change. And they're going to subpoena all your records for the last decade. And the Virgin Islands went after a think tank called the Competitive Enterprise Institute. They wanted 20 years worth of records. Now, the Competitive Enterprise Institute had the resources to fight back and win. But if you're a small business or an individual, maybe you don't. And so they don't even have to win in court. They can just terrify you into saying, fine, we'll stop. We won't do anything you don't like because we don't have the resources to fight the dozens or hundreds of attorneys and all of the money of the state government, all of the money of the Attorney General office. And that's all they have to do to win, to intimidate you, to intimidate the American people into saying, well, we don't have the resources to fight back.
Well, as you know, that's not how it works on some occasions. Jay Sekulow has a great legal think tank that gets involved in constitutional issues. The Liberty Foundation, oh, my God, there's all kinds of groups. I mean, you went to law school, the Brown versus Board of Education, 1954. Thurgood Marshall argued that case for Brown. Obviously, the plaintiff had no money, couldn't take a case to the United States Supreme Court. The NAACP paid for it. So I would say that it might be incumbent, with all due respect, on the Energy and Environmental Legal Institute to maybe take on some of these cases. You know, the Citizens for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms and the Second Amendment Foundation, chaired by Alan Gottlieb, does lawsuits all the time on the Second Amendment and gun rights, all the time. So since you call yourselves a legal institute, do you do any of this work in taking on cases that are prime of cases withstanding and are prime for discussion and resolution to get this thing done once and for all, bringing it up to the United States Supreme Court and being the advocate for people who cannot afford it, as you suggest?
Oh, absolutely. We try to take on these cases as much as we can. We try to take on these cases. We try to file suit on FOIA requests in order to get documents so that we can show them to the public, so that we can educate the public. I mean, we have lawsuits going on in New York and Vermont and Rhode Island right now. But they win insidiously. They win by intimidating people here and there. And so no matter how many cases you fight them against, their goal is to win a little bit at a time. And that's why as important as fighting them in court is, it's also important to educate the public about what's really going on, about what their aim is.
But see, here's the thing. Yeah, if you could get one case like Brown versus Board of Education in the segregated education field, if you could get one case that you'd get up to the United States Supreme Court, and that court, even with the liberals on the court, would probably get a majority at least to say that, no, you cannot squelch discussion if that becomes the central issue on these issues and penalize people for saying that global warming is not caused by human beings. You can't do that. Let's assume you get the case up there and the United States Supreme Court says that. Well, now you've squashed that entire area, which means that then everybody has open opportunity to debate that issue because the court made its decision and lower courts are not going to approve something that has already been decided by the United States Supreme Court.
Well, you're absolutely right. And that's one of the things we'd like to do. But in the meantime, this continues on. They continue to intimidate people and the fight just goes on all over the place. And that's part of the problem. While you're working to get a good case, while you're working to get a good court, while you're working to make sure that you win and that you get the result you need, they're coming up with other tactics. I mean, this is their current tactic, try to criminalize anyone to dissent. But as soon as we crush them on this, they'll just come up with another tactic. And that's why as important as winning in the field of law is public education, explaining why this isn't really a problem. Explaining why this is going on, why they're trying this, is just as important.
Well, you know, I commend you for getting, you're kind of doing what Judicial Watch does in other areas. You're doing in this environmental field. One of the things you found is this quote, where they talk about the possibility of, and I'm quoting now, investigations of representations made by companies to investors, consumers, and the public regarding fossil fuels, renewable energy, and climate change, end quote. That goes to the heart of free speech. They want to investigate representations, which means statements made by these companies with regard to fossil fuels. That I think the public needs to understand. If they do that and they're successful at that, you might as well take the First Amendment and throw it out the window.
Exactly. And once they can start investigating what companies said, what companies thought, and they can do it to anybody, anytime they want. And they want to do this, and they want to do it in absolute secret. And they want to defy state and the federal open records laws in order to discuss their plans and put these plans into effect without telling anybody, without having to explain what they're doing. Because anytime they attempt to do this in public, they get lambasted. I mean, when they first did this press conference, when it became clear what their plan was, there was a massive negative reaction that forced a lot of the attorney generals to say, wait, we're not sure we want to do this. And so they turned to secret methods where when public methods don't work.
Well, and in other words, it shows the disingenuousness that they want to get it done at any cost in any way. The end justifies the means. And that's one of the that's one of the elements of the far left in this country on a whole range of issues. And you're just facing it in this area of climate change, global warming, and its alleged impact by human beings, which is basically almost non-existent. What are your plans in the immediate future now at your organization, Energy and Environment Legal Institute, to try and get this out to the public even more? I mean, since the media won't cover it, what are you going to do?
We're continuing to fight in a number of states to try and force them to release documents. We're continuing public education efforts. We continue to put the information out to the media in hopes that people like you will explain to their audiences, will attempt to get out to the public what's really going on. But our major effort is really in our litigation and transparency areas in order to get documents from the government that the government wants to keep secret and to make them available to the public. And even as we look for the right cases in order to challenge them when they try to overstep their bounds.
Well, I wish you good luck with it, obviously. We're certainly here, and as things break, we'll continue to cover it. We've had many people on from the Heartland Institute. We're happy to have people on from the Environment and Energy Legal Institute as well. Keep up the good work. Don't ever waver on protecting the First Amendment. And for that, we thank you. And Mr. Mendelbaum, I wish you good luck at your organization. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. And thank you very much for having me on and giving me the chance to speak with you.
It's a pleasure. And appreciate your time, too. Mike Siegel here. Isn't that something? People want to shut people up about legitimate public issues. That's how the left works. Thanks for listening.